I'll have what she's having.
You are listening in to the Our Better Half podcast, episode 10, March 13th, 2016. Welcome. The voice you hear is Laura Collins Listermensch, a middle-aged lady who talks about sex for classic bodies because, well, it's fun. Today's guests are the author Phil Parker and Lydia Daniller, who is the co-founder of the OMG Yes website, and also a visit from our quill pen pal, Alberta Knish. It was recently, and again, in the news, that sex is good for the brain. This idea, like all others similar, telling us that red wine or chocolate are the secret keys to longevity and vitality, they all sell us ideas that we have already purchased. If you told us that sex and chocolate and red wine were bad for us, we won't listen, and making it a virtue didn't really need to be done. But what I find interesting is that all these things are touted as good because they're good for you, that being happy is okay, as long as it also has a healthy element. But not all fun things extend your life. I wonder why we need this kind of permission. We need to feel virtuous and healthy to feel permitted to enjoy a thing. Would we really have more chocolate if it was just fun? Would we fail to go to work or do the laundry because we were so distracted by pleasure-seeking? Without permission through virtue or health, would we be unable to stop being happy? What if red wine and chocolate and orgasms? This sounds like a pitch for Valentine's Day bestsellers here, but what if they neither harmed nor helped us? What if they were just fun? But sex, and by this I mean sexual pleasure with or without others involved, with or without the outie part in the innie area, sex with or without orgasms, all sexual pleasure is peddled as a cure for pretty much everything. Your heart, your immune system, your skin and hair, your gendery sensitive parts, your lungs, your spine, your core, and your brain. Tellingly, the more recent study talks about better memory associated with more sex for old people. Of course, we don't know if more sex helps the brain or cleverer brains pursue more sex, but never mind. Boomers and older people live in the shadow of dementia and getting dafter as we age. Just as we thought patchouli oil would bring world peace in our youth, we will click, click, click on anything that promises that we might be spared that fate. I have a last article read policy on all my vices. If I find a study that says something will improve my health and happiness, and it's something I enjoy, I make that the last article I will ever read. And that is why I drink coffee with impunity. I can't be bothered about genetically modified foods and believe deeply that Alec Baldwin remains both charming and kind. So when studies say that sex of all kinds may stave off dementia, I'm quite sure everyone over 50 is happy to make that the last thing we read on either topic. Case closed. Sex in the second half of life is a topic that, though too rarely discussed, has its fans. There have been a handful of books, there are a few very active advocates, and even the Huffington Post now has a page for sex over 50. Our guest, Phil Parker, wrote his book, Grandpa Does Grandma, in 2009, and recently reissued it. If you have not read it, take a look on the OurBetterHalf.net website for a look at the illustrations, which will give you a fair view of the tone of the book itself. It's fun, it's realistic, it's seriously funny. I had a chance to talk to Phil, who is the grandpa of the book, and his wife Bonnie, who is the grandma. Hello, Phil and Bonnie.
Good morning.
Hey, Laura.
What were your childhood dreams for what you would be doing at this age?
Well, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me. Actually, I had no childhood dreams. I thought I was going to be a retired naval officer.
How about you, Bonnie?
Well, you know, I was born in the 40s, so for me it was more just get married, have kids, maybe teach. I never really had much ambition beyond that. Even after high school, I just figured I'd go a traditional route.
I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is when you're young and you're impressionable, you don't ever think that you're going to age.
What did you both end up doing for careers?
Well, after 5 years in the United States Navy as a naval officer over in the South China Sea off the coast of Vietnam, I entered the corporate world and then spent the rest of my career in corporate technology.
I graduated in 66, and then I pursued a career in teaching, ultimately left that and got involved in franchising for a number of years, and now I support women in business. So I've gone from the classroom to franchising to entrepreneurship.
And how old are you both now?
Well, I'll be 77 in May.
And I was 71 in November.
Which I just want to comment on age, because as I peruse things, I see everything talks about sex after 50. And I'm thinking, after 50, I can't even remember 50. How about sex after 70?
How long have you been married?
We've been together for 27 years. We are a second marriage.
Your book is titled Grandpa Does Grandma, The ABCs of Senior Sex, and it came out in 2009. What's the funniest response you've had to the book?
Oh, my gosh. Well, one of the funniest responses is of the four children, one of them refused to read it, and that didn't surprise us because the kids do not visualize, cannot imagine, cannot accept that their parents had sex, have or had sex, even though they are the result of intimacy. So I think that was one of the things that really kind of threw both of us is the embarrassment that comes with young people not wanting to accept the reality of the older generation. Phil, would you comment?
Yeah, I would agree with what you just said, Bonnie. However, when it comes to me, most people look at me and they think I'm a dirty old man. And they also think I must be on some kind of drugs, Viagra, Cialis, because I'm 77 and still talking about sex. Nothing could be further from the truth. I am as young as I ever was, and the sex is as good as it ever was.
I don't know what to say about that, Laura.
It sounds good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Describe the book.
Well, the book was written because I was at my local bookstore one morning, and a young gal serving coffee asked me if she could ask me a personal question. I said, sure. She said, how old are you? I said, I think I was 74 at the time. She said, well, now that you're past 70 and you don't have sex anymore, what is it that you do for excitement? I said, excuse me? So after I told her there was still lead in my pencil, I came home, related that incident to my wife, to Bonnie, and Bonnie said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, I'm going to write a book about it. To which Bonnie said, you're not serious. I said, I'm dead serious. Hence, Grandpa Does Grandma, The ABCs of Senior Sex.
And I tease about this because I say eventually I'm going to write a sequel that's called Grandma Gets Even. But one of the things that's really, really, really wonderful about the book is it's got two parts. It's got the edgy, which is, quote, a male's point of view, and it's got the softer side, i.e. a woman's point of view. And with all honesty, Phil really wrote both sections. I did have to, you know, provide some insight relative to the softer side, but he's a man that truly understands and appreciates a woman and who she is and what her needs are. And I think what's great about the book is that men need to read the softer side and women need to read the edgy side so that they can have the best possible intimacy that, you know, that they can create for themselves.
What is it about the two of you that makes you so willing to go there to talk about a taboo topic?
You know, we are both and have always been very, very open in our relationship with the two of us and also in all our relationships with friends, family, et cetera. And getting older, life is about humor. And if you don't have a sense of humor, I don't care what you're doing in life, you're not going to have much fun. And so sex has always been an important part of my life, as my wife will vouch for. And it continues to be an important part of my life. But most importantly is my love and my respect for my partner, Bonnie. That's what makes makes it all worthwhile. And that's what makes it happen. And I would say to your listeners that it's all about respect. I call it full disclosure. No mystery. Shouldn't have any mystery in your relationship. Full disclosure, your sex life will increase by leaps and bounds. What say you, Grandma?
Well, I would concur with what Phil shared. You asked about what is it about our relationship that encouraged us to be so open. And I think there's great joy to be had when individuals are willing to be open and vulnerable, because we know that others are learning from us by our example. And the best example that I can provide that's current is we are now apartment dwellers, having sold a house after a number of years of empty bedrooms and deciding it was too much space. And we are befriending a lot of younger, and they, I'm not saying 20s and 30s, but individuals in their 40s and 50s who, and I'm saying it with some modesty, who really look up to us and appreciate that they have an older couple that they can maybe look forward to modeling, or that they don't have parents and grandparents nearby, and therefore they adopt us and they want to learn from us. So I think closing the door on a relationship and not sharing versus being open and honest about sharing really does create an environment of acceptance and appreciation. And Phil and I have always been that way in our relationship, and will continue to be. And whether it's about blended family or sexuality or misunderstanding, we feel that we have enough strength in our relationship to set a good example and be honest in where we are.
Yeah, I think trust plays an important part in that.
Well, obviously humor does as well. So what's the relationship between humor and sex?
Well, you know, humor is everything, not just in sex. You have to go through life with humor. Everybody goes through life, and everybody's life, rain will fall in everybody's life. I mean, we've survived a lot of things. My wife lost a son. He was 39. She just spent a year going through breast cancer. Thank God she's now cancer-free. So, you know, everybody has their challenges. And in order to get through those challenges, you have to look at life with humor. Everything in life is kind of funny if you look at it that way.
Well, then the other thing is, she asked, you know, as it relates to sex, and what I would say is, listen, we are older, you know, things are sagging. I don't look in the mirror in the side view as often as I might have, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And we laugh a lot. I mean, sometimes we'll get in bed and something will strike me as funny, and the next thing I know is that we are literally laughing our way.
So, let me interrupt real quick, because, you know, in all honesty, we used to have a mirror above our bed. In our bedroom, but we took it down. You might ask why we took it down. Because it came to it, I realized that things appear larger than they really are when you're looking in a mirror. So we took the damn thing down.
Yeah. No, we love having fun, and we love being delicious in just our relationship. And that's not just, you know, the sexual aspect, but sitting on the couch together a Saturday night, say here we are, the Parkers, on another Saturday night, doing special things for each other. There's so much about our relationship that continues to keep us wanting to grow and strengthen and to remain a forever.
Yeah, our relationship is built on a lot of different things, and sex is only the climax of the relationship, no pun intended.
The illustrator for the book, Rafael Nazario, these illustrations are just delightful and very playful, not safe for work. How did you find the right fit between too graphic and too Disney?
Well, it was really interesting. Rafael was at the Savannah College of Arts and Science, SCAD as it's called here in Atlanta. I put an ad on the bulletin board there for an illustrator. I told him what I wanted. I got about 30 or 40 replies from anything from gargoyles to cartoon characters, etc. Just really weird stuff. Rafael was right on the button. I asked him to give me some illustrations for, like, the letter A, maybe the letter D, the letter whatever, X, and he was right on, so I hired him. And he did those illustrations both in color, black and white, and some of them are animated, as you probably might have seen on the website. But he was great.
And he did it so that we would look like the animated characters, you know, Phil with his glasses and so on. So we were thrilled. I mean, he was the man, and we were thrilled that he wanted to do the project. And he's young, Phil. You know, I think at the time he was in his 20s, and we even asked him about it, and he just got great joy out of working with Phil. So it was really a win-win for everybody.
I read in the Huffington Post that your niece, Ashley Parker, said, "It wasn't burnishing the family name. We wished him well, and yet." So I have a feeling that beyond shocking the youngsters, you had a larger goal with the book. What did you hope the book would do?
Well, my niece Ashley, who's a writer for the New York Times, a prolific writer for the New York Times, front page byline, when she put the article in the Huffington Post, she basically told everybody in the family that she has a sick uncle. But when I wrote the book, focus group with the book, and it became evident to me that people wanted to explore their sexuality, but because of the mores in this country and some other things, they were reluctant to do so. So I wrote the book in the hopes that it would show people as they age that sex doesn't go away, that sexuality, spirituality, closeness, intimacy, that stuff continues as you get older. And what it does, it builds on your relationship. And so I'm hoping that when people read the book, it's a tongue-in-cheek book, I'll grant you, but it does have some serious overtones to it. And I'm hoping, as response that I've gotten to those that have read it, that it's really been enlightening to know that they are not alone in their feelings as they age, as they get past 50, 60, and into their 70s and 80s. I mean, there was just an article, I think, in one of the magazines about senior dating. Seniors are now doing speed dating. Can you believe that? They're doing speed dating. I'm trying to slow things down a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I'd like to comment, too, when you said, you know, Laura, what did you hope to get out of besides writing the book? And it's strengthening our relationship. We're finding that as people such as yourself comment, or we get comments about the book, or people wanting to buy it as an engagement gift, or, you know, even for their parents for an anniversary present, we're finding that it's enriching our lives, that our willingness to be open, to be vulnerable, to really share who we are and what we believe in is inspiring other people, which inspires us to continue to do good work in the world. I mean, this is something we can do together. This is something that it's strengthening us, and certainly has the same opportunity for those that are willing to read it and learn and be open with each other, because intimacy can keep a relationship going for a long time, and intimacy, whether it's holding hands or kissing or writing notes or an arm around a shoulder or opening up a car door, all those things promote closeness, and that's what we're all about, and that's what we want to convey to other people.
I got to say, I just love Grandma. She's just so eloquent in her verbiage.
Thank you.
So any other projects, any other books planned?
We actually have a manuscript that's done that's called The Magic of Us. That's the working title. And it's about our relationship over the years and how it's affected other people and how we hope it will affect other people. We just haven't quite figured out what to do with it yet. But it is in the works. And I might write the sequel to Grandpa Does Grandma. I thought about writing Grandpa Does Grandma in Venice. And that way we could get it on in the gondola.
I don't know about that one, Phil, but I think if we do anything, we'll do the Grandma Gets Even and then do a fun book.
I'm a little off the wall. Grandma keeps me grounded.
Maybe Grandma Does Grandpa.
Grandma Does Grandpa all the time to set your mind at ease.
All right. What do the younger generation say? TMI, too much information. But we appreciate you, and they appreciate the opportunity for us to enjoy our own humor with each other and with you and with your listening audience. And it's just a special treat on a morning. The only thing better would be sharing a cup of coffee together, I guess.
Well, thank you very much, Phil and Bonnie. Best wishes.
Thank you.
Laura, thanks for having us both.
Every week, we take a moment to do a few Kegel exercises. We squeeze and release our pelvic floor muscles, I'm doing it right now, to keep things strong and firm and well-functioning. But I fear that not everyone does them enough or at all. So if this week's Kegel sound effect is at all like what your underparts are feeling, you need these exercises more than anyone. Dr. Ruth Westheimer is the 1980s era sex ed warrior who made talking about sex unsexy. I don't mean that she wasn't sexy herself, but that talking about it wasn't just to be titillating or taboo. Dr. Ruth, who became the 4-foot-7-inch tall darling of the media in my teens, seemed at that time like an impossibly old woman to be talking about sex, but her lessons had a lasting impression. The fact is, that old woman was at that time around the age I am now, which isn't that old. And Dr. Westheimer at 87 is still talking about sex, still writing, still traveling. And in wishing this podcast well, she turned down an interview because she was too much on the road, which if you check her Twitter feed is true. But I can't do this podcast without referring to the patron saint of old people talking about sex. So here is our Dr. Ruth quote of the episode from her book, Sex After 50.
Some of you are going to worry that if you were to have sex in the kitchen, a room where most people don't have blinds or drapes, that someone might see you. I'm not recommending that you become exhibitionists, but there are ways of minimizing this risk, such as making love at night with the lights out or using only candles. And if someone were to knock on the back door, well, you're in your own home, so you're not doing anything illegal.
I've been through the mill of love. Oh, love. New love.
Hello, Alberta Knish, our senior correspondent of Antiquated Sex. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing today?
Very well. What is our topic today?
Today, I thought I'd talk a little bit about the representation of lady bits in Western art. Some of the earliest art found at all, dating back to 37,000 BC, was a figurine of what's called the Venus of Holofels, and she's an ivory figurine, and she's got really, really big boobs and really, really big labia. Mm-hmm. And there's some scoring and everything that looks like that they were trying to represent pubic hair and everything. And she's thought to be a fertility figurine. Now, I'm going to caution that whenever archaeologists find something that they don't know what it is, they decide it's a religious artifact. So she may not have been a figurine. She may have been something that somebody made for their own entertainment. Mm-hmm. But shortly thereafter, in France, on the inside of a cave where they also found lots of fertility drawings for the hunt, is Vizier Valley, France. They found a carving in the wall that looks like it's probably meant to be a vagina, or at least a vulva. It's a circle with a slit in it. It's hard to imagine they were trying to make a representation of an early on button, or maybe they were.
I'm never going to look at an on button the same.
So clearly this is something representing the human form, representing female anatomy has been something we've been doing as long as we've been doing representational art. I'm going to fast forward a little bit to the early Greek sculpture, which I think are images that people are probably more familiar with. And we're used to seeing these alabaster, marble and other white stone figurines, but people should remember that the Greeks actually painted them. So when they looked at them, they saw them not white. They weren't monochromatic at all. Mm-hmm. Around about 500 BC, what we notice in the sculptures, I mean, everybody's familiar with Greek sculptures of men that are incredibly detailed and anatomically correct. Mm. And the women's are correct until you get to the area of the pudenda, and then everything is very smoothed out. What we don't know is maybe pubic hair and everything was painted over it, but what you've lost is any depiction of the labia themselves, which on a actual person you could see if they were standing in front of you naked. And this continues for a long, long time. When we start getting to the Renaissance era where artists are really interested in depicting things in very realistic ways, you know, Titian's Venus Urbino, she's this luxurious nude, and she's lying back, and she's got her hand covering everything, but you can't see any sign. I mean, it looks like the skin that she's covering is completely smooth and unmarred. A little bit earlier, Da Vinci was doing detailed pen drawings of the female anatomy, but this was for a medical book, the female sexual organs. This wasn't commissioned work that was sitting on somebody's wall. And what's interesting there is you're seeing this very detailed work of the vagina and all of the structures, outer labia, inner labia, but no heads. You're just seeing the bits of the anatomy that he's interested in drawing.
Oh.
And this is a theme that comes up. Either you see the full nude and no realistic depiction of what the vagina looks like and the vulva looks like and the mons looks like, or you see some detail and you don't see the face. And probably the most detailed that comes up is Goya was the first one, La Maja Desnuda, and she looks very real, but you can't see the face of the model. And then Gustave Courbet, who has a painting called The Origin of the World, is nearly photographic in its detail of it's looking at a woman reclining, and the view is from between her legs, and it's almost like a photograph, but you can't see the face of the model. And that comes in the late 1860s, and come the turn of the century, a lot of artists, mostly German artists, are starting to depict the female anatomy in that kind of detail. What's common is you're not seeing the face of these models. Now, maybe it was done for the model's modesty, given the mores at the time. But, this is something that continues to go until we enter the photographic era. And Stieglitz took a photo of Georgia O'Keeffe's nude torso, and that just opens the door. We start getting all kinds of photographic representation, but in sculpture and painting, we're still seeing this pattern of not knowing who the model is, of seeing only the detail of the body, and if you can see the face, then somehow you've obscured what you're looking at in terms of their lady bits. This all comes to a screeching halt when feminism hits the art world in the 1970s to the modern period, and you start seeing photos and paintings, and they're all very detailed, and sometimes, the person's nude, and sometimes there's been genital piercing, and, accumulating in the UK artist Jamie McCartney's famous Great Wall of Vagina, which are all plaster casts of women models. So he's trying to combat the idea that vaginas have one way to look and one way to be, and that the way they aren't naturally isn't just gorgeous.
I know we can only guess what these representations were for in the way, way past.
Yeah.
But it strikes me that we're often talking about the difference between titillation and art and education or even medicalization.
Yes, absolutely. And you never find the same works being used for all three. Isn't that interesting?
Ah.
I'm trying to think. I've never seen, I don't believe that there's, even though Da Vinci did detailed drawings of every conceivable part of the anatomy that can be seen or not, I don't know that there have been very many art exhibits of his medical drawings. And yet, it's his medical drawings that inform all the artwork. As a for instance, I don't think in textbooks there's that depict anatomy. There's a deliberate removing of the people there because the focus is supposed to be on the body parts. When you look for something for titillation, there's very rarely an honest depiction of who the human being is. And then in a lot of these things where we're looking at who the person is, there tends to be an erasure of her sexual organs.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much. We're going to have links to all of these references in the show notes.
Thank you.
Last week, I announced a contest awarding a subscription to the omgyes.com website to one lucky listener. The winner was chosen yesterday, and there's at least one happy vulva out there. You may also have heard in the news that the actor, Emma Watson, or as Harry Potter fans know her, Hermione, spoke the praises of OMGYES recently in a conversation with Gloria Steinem. Check the OurBetterHalf.net site for the video. So, of course, everyone's curious about OMGYES now, as I was. So I called the co-founder, Lydia Daneler, to learn what I could. Hello, Lydia.
Hello.
It's very nice to talk with you. You're the co-founder of OMGYES. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah, you can say that, or you can say OMGYES, like, oh my God, yes.
When you were a kid, what did you dream of doing when you grew up? Was it this?
Oh, wow, that's funny. I think for a while there was a aspiration of being a professional tennis player. And I did think I would do some teaching, so I guess this is somewhat educational, so it does come around a bit.
Oh, you're a revolutionary. So how old are you now, Lydia?
I'm about to turn 38.
And how much time do you spend every day thinking about women's orgasms?
Actually, I guess I don't know. I mean, I've heard amazing stories of women and how they achieve pleasure and how they increase pleasure. But there are days when I guess I don't think about it every day.
Can you describe for someone who hasn't seen this site, what is OMGYES?
Yeah, so OMGYES is a website where you can explore and discover concepts that lead to more pleasure. It's presented to the world in two ways. We have documentary-style videos where women explain in detail what works for them, and they share their insights around sex and pleasure that they've had across their lifetime. And then we've created something that is somewhat experiential, where you can practice the techniques either on a touch screen or on a mouse and get feedback along the way. So we wanted to create something that was personal and relatable so that you could engage with this very personal information in a way that made sense and was authentic and sort of intimate. So that's why we chose to interview women all about sex and pleasure and really hear those stories, sort of like if a good friend was telling you about sex and pleasure. And then we created this experiential component so people could practice and really see up close how this stuff plays out in the real world.
Some of the terms on the site, edging, hinting, layering, orbiting, they're great words, but they're not the usual pillow talk. What's the origin of these approaches?
Yeah, so we actually did a lot of talking to women. We spoke to over 1,000 women in qualitative interviews, and certain concepts came up again and again. And women would have different words for them. But for example, you know, lots of people told us the importance of something staying the same. So some people would call it staying consistent, or another person would call it, you know, staying the same. And so when we'd hear something again and again, you know, we'd take notes, and then oftentimes the words would just come out of those conversations. So for example, we have a technique called consistency, and that is the importance of something staying the same. Another technique we heard again and again was surprise, which is sort of the exact opposite of consistency. And that's the importance of keeping yourself guessing or keeping your partner guessing in some form or fashion. So some of those words that we came up with came directly from those conversations with women. Other times, you know, we sat back and said, huh, how can we represent this in a way that makes sense and give people the language to talk about this in detail. And so in those instances, sometimes we just made up words that made sense, like orbiting, for example, is a concept about the importance and the pleasure of a circular motion. And, you know, we'd hear again and again that circles, like do a circular motion, would be something very pleasurable. But everyone's circle varies quite a bit. Some people would do really tight circles. Other people would talk about a very large, sort of slow circle. So we decided that orbiting would make the most sense for that.
Is this primarily for the woman herself or for those who don't have clitorises or for anyone?
It's for anyone and everyone who's curious about women's pleasure. And that's actually been showing up quite a bit in our user base. We have about 50% men and 50% women who are signing up to learn more about pleasure. So we're very happy about that.
Okay, so here's a little bit of a tough question.
Sure.
4 clicks in with no login, and you're up close and personal within a living vulva. So what's the line between educational and pornographic?
That's a good question. I think it's intent. Our intent was to give people more language and tools and things to discover and explore. And sex is such an important part of life. You know, it's one of the most pleasurable parts of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we think that it's just so important to have these frank and candid conversations. So, of course, this material is inherently arousing. We are talking about pleasure and we're showing pleasure. So some people may be aroused and, you know, we think that's okay.
These are real women on the site showing us these techniques. They're not actors, right?
No, they're not actors. Yeah, they're regular women that were just devoted to this topic and wanted to get their insights out to the world.
Mm-hmm. At least one of them I notice is a woman of age. And that is the topic of this podcast is women in their second half of life. Do you offer age or maturity-related coaching in here, or is the coaching and information universal?
The information is universal. We are at work to research pleasure mid and post-menopause. That's something that we'd like to have more materials on and get out to the world. Some women talk about it a little bit in what we have right now, but we'd love to have a little bit more information, and that's something that we're working on at the moment.
Mm-hmm. What about people with penises? Will there be an OMGS for the fellas?
You know, everything is possible. Right now, we're still really focused on women's pleasure because we think that there's a lack of resources out there for people to really explore this stuff. But down the road, we're completely open to exploring pleasure and all its facets.
Why not an app?
So the App Store has quite strict regulations about what they consider to be explicit and possibly pornographic versus educational. And so anything that has explicit video doesn't always survive the App Store. So we wanted to make sure that we could still get this out to the world, which is why we built it as a website. So we wouldn't have any kind of censoring from any app store.
Mm. This is season one, and I believe the fee right now is $29?
Correct. Yes, it's $29.
Is it profitable?
Right now we have 20,000 users, so that's great. And
20,000.
Our user base is growing. It did take some money to make the whole thing, so you know we haven't paid that all back yet, but hopefully we will with time.
Do you know about the demographics? Do you know if there are older people using it?
Yeah. Actually, older people are finding this very informative and helpful, and they're signing up more than any other age group, basically people over 50, which
really?
Is really cool. Yeah. And we think it's because with experience, you realize how much more there is out there. You know, younger folks tend to sometimes think that they know everything already.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only by going through your life and having some relationships succeed and maybe fail that you realize that, you know, there's so much to explore and you can always discover new things. But older people are really into it, which is great. The one thing that I just want to put out there is that I think better sex is really about self-knowledge. And knowledge and insight come from time and experience. So we actually joke around the office I mean, it's not really a joke, it's true, but some of the older people that we've talked to seem to have better sex than the younger people because they have more experience and more time to explore. So I think there's something for everyone with OMGS.
I love it. That's really great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Be well.
This prude is unafraid. I subscribe to news feeds that would fry your browsers. I also read journals that render the topic of sex as dry as Antarctic snow. But I do it for you. And here's the in-case-you-missed-it sex news for the week. Viola Davis, 50-year-old actor, is taking a break from sex scenes in How to Get Away from Murder after she blew her back out during a rough, sexy time on camera. Get well soon, Viola. A man in Pittsburgh's lawyer says that it was, quote, completely out of character, unquote, for his client to build a bomb with a vibrator and duct tape. But that does not say whether it was the bomb, the duct tape, or the vibrator that was not in character. Although this fellow told the arresting officers that the bomb was a fake, they blew it up as a precaution. They blew up his sex toy. This seems very harsh to me. In case you're still undecided on Hitler, add this to your knowledge base, that his contemporaries understood him to be a coprophiliac. He was turned on by poo. And that this, not his reign of terror or his vile racial beliefs, made some supporters abandon the party. I need to let you know there is a fertility crisis that may be under your radar. Teen pregnancies are down in the U.S., as low as it's been in 15 years. A 61% drop in women between 15 and 19. So, if you're looking to become an early grandparent, consider this. Abstinence-only programs do a better job of keeping your cradles full. Schools that teach don't ever do it tend to leave the ones who do it less likely to prevent pregnancy. And there doesn't seem to be an abstinence-only teenage population. Also, for us old people to know, younger generations are the least sexually active, less than we were, more likely to use contraception than we were, and have access to better methods we did, including emergency contraception, if it all goes wrong. Clever young people. Look forward to a condom made of grass, my friends. But as scratchy and uncomfortable as that sounds, it will apparently be as smooth and thin as human hair, and every bit as strong, keeping those pesky spermatozoa in their place and everyone's fluids and viruses on their side of the bed. Also on the horizon, spray-on barriers for penises and vulvas with this new material made from Spinifex grass. And for you First Peoples advocates, take note, Spinifex, used by Indigenous Australians, is being acknowledged by the developers, along with a guarantee of jobs to that community as well. There is a certain poignancy to a group decimated by early germ warfare and violent persecution, employed in stopping the spread of viruses and preventing pregnancies around the world. Thank you for listening, for your support, for your messages, and your ideas. Congratulations to the winner of the OMG Yes contest. For more information about this episode and this podcast, visit ourbetterhalf.net, and you may, before next week's show, want to check out the topic of ASMR, Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, which if you have not heard of before will absolutely fascinate you. I'm looking forward to introducing you to a popular whisperer. I also want to welcome a new human to the world, my parents' new grandchild who was born this week. Getting older is not without its benefits, including seeing new little people arriving. Now, old people, remember your orgasms, not because they're good for you, and not because you should, but because you can. Just for its own sake, enjoy a lovely orgasm today. Goodbye.